maybe, as I often do, is talk a little bit about here about what's happened over at the up at City Hall and City Council arena. Feels like an arena sometime. The new council with the two new members of Tim Flaherty and Eyal Zuby, Alzaby, I have to kind of retrain myself for the pronunciation. Together with seven people who were reelected, or they're just sort of finding their position. People, looking for attention. Like hungry little babies initially, but they seem to be sort of finding who they are. To my, I think I can fairly say that Alzaby, who I just expected nothing but the worst from because she's so radically left wing, that it would just be the Al Zuby show every week. But actually, the amendments that she offered to a few of the items that were before the council recently were actually really very intelligently crafted. And welcome, and they were accepted as amendments to some proposals, right across the board. I think on the Cambridge Street rezoning, she was very much the no vote because she still feels that that would be it's all just high income housing, and she would, in her world view, I think she would prefer to see all new housing be so-called 100% affordable housing. But that's not going to happen. Anyway, so that's been okay. Tim Flaherty's actually been very, very outspoken, and I think his skills as a lawyer actually are welcome there. I think he makes a lot of sense in very much from a different political persuasion than the other new counselor, but I think he's been proving to be a pretty good addition to the council. Now, I was going to just mention a few particular things, and I may flip back and forth on the computer to these things, or I might just ramble on about it. One of the more interesting moments at the most recent city council meeting for me, and not just a moment, but it was a proposal, was, and I'm going to paraphrase it here, but it was a proposal that anyone, and everybody's upset about Trump administration and about some of the terrible things that we've seen graphically laid out on the television and in the internet of people who were killed by gunfire during protests against the presence of either Border Patrol or ICE or whatever other agents, federal agencies are participating in some of this immigration enforcement that's been going on. Now, regardless how you feel about immigration enforcement, whether you think it's a, yeah, we need to do that because it's long overdue, or if you hate it because you don't, either there should be no borders and anybody is welcome everywhere, regardless. The fact is, it will, as a result of the presidential election, we all knew there was going to be enhanced immigration enforcement. I think most people are kind of horrified with this sort of ferocity of it, and the unprofessionalism of some in some of the incidences. Some like to say the execution of some individuals, and I don't think these are, you could really call executions. They were sort of either badly trained people making really exercising very poor judgment. Perhaps triggered by some of the activities of the people who then ended up being killed, but you shouldn't be sentenced to death for it all. Anyway, so there's a lot of backlash here locally and across the country about it. But one of the proposals that came in front of the city council, which I'll say right up front, I thought was ludicrous, still think it's ludicrous, was they proposed that anyone who was hired to work for immigration, so for ICE, and this was later amended to include, the border patrols or some of the, I don't even know the names of all these federal agencies that are involved in one way or another, but that if you were hired after January 20th of 1995, which of course was, I said 1995, pardon me, 2025, which was inauguration of Mr. Trump. That you would be prohibited from ever working for the Cambridge Police Department. Now, first off, that's a, as the city solicitor pointed out, it is such an obvious violation of the civil service system. You can't just say we're not going to hire you because we don't like where you worked before, you know. So anyway, the counselors were warned that what you're doing may not be legal, right? Unless you want to file a home rule petition to be given authority to do this, but I think that just isn't going to happen. I can't imagine that happening. So when after being warned that maybe this would be illegal, they actually upped the ante and they said they wanted to prohibit anyone who has ever worked for immigration or border agency anytime retroactively that you could never work for Cambridge Police Department. Now I happen to know there are some people who work for Cambridge Police who actually did work in some of those agencies. So it's sort of like, come on, give me a break, will you? And you know, show a little sympathy too. I mean, sure, you could have some proud boy nitwit going in there, just want to sort of grab for the money and get a job with ICE, get no training, and then be given a gun and do horrible things. Sure, that could happen. But you could also have somebody who just needed work, and they saw that there was a federal program where there was a lot of money going to be available if you actually take a job working at that. And you may have no enmity in your heart whatsoever, but it was just a job. So Cambridge City Council are going to now say you shall hear, you know, maybe you wanted to work in law enforcement one day, and this you saw as sort of a way of getting started. So now what? That's going to be the reason why you can't ever work in law enforcement in a place like Cambridge or elsewhere? I just thought it was ridiculous, and I think it is ridiculous, and I hope we can kind of get past that. There was also a city manager communication, actually from the Cambridge Police Department, you know, about interactions with immigration officials. By the way, one thing I should mention is one of the amendments from Ms. Elsbee, which really would make sense, is that the original order was very about this and other things, where and another important matter had to do with it was specifically mentioning either ICE. So she said, no, you really should do this by function. It's not so much what agency you're part of, it's what job are you actually doing. So they did modify some of these things. But, you know, the way we, our system is designed in Cambridge, it's supposed to be our, you can call it our sanctuary city ordinance, which got it rebranded at some point as our welcoming city ordinance. And just basically, you know, in a nutshell, just says you're not supposed to cooperate with federal agencies, you know, in basically conducting immigration enforcement activities. But the exception is, I mean, if somebody is involved in a criminal case, you know, and they were arrested or maybe in jail, it says like, well, then you cooperate, right? Because if somebody's really involved in criminal activity, then most people even across the country even agree that those are the people maybe immigration enforcement should be targeted toward those folks. I was a little confused though. There was one incident, I won't pull it up here, but it's in the report from the police department of an incident where somebody was in jail in Cambridge in custody for assault and battery and strangulation. And then he said, you know, when immigration came a knocking and said, you know, we want information about this, Cambridge chose to not cooperate. And I thought, look, if somebody's picked up because of a traffic violation or, you know, or something else, fine. But, you know, let's be clear, you know, if a person's involved, and maybe it's just an accusation, it's not a conviction, so maybe that's the distinction, can't say, but seems to me that maybe you should be cooperating in instances like that, but that's just me, right? So I guess maybe I'm sort of going against the grain of the current Cambridge ethos these days. But anyway, so that was something going on. One other thing that I was all over the news, actually. There were all the many of the region mayors Had a big press conference, so Mayor Wu from Boston was there, and the city manager of Cambridge, but also with the mayor, Sumbul Siddiqui, where they were announcing that we were going to play hardball and we're not going to allow federal immigration people to use any city-owned property. And I think that's perfectly legal. I think that makes some sense. I mean, you can't sort of marshal the forces of the of ICE should they come in force to somebody like Cambridge. You can't sort of host them in City Hall or say we're going to take over the gym at the high school to orchestrate our things. Of course, you could say no, you can't do that, right? But one thing, this is maybe a little bit more subtle, I found interesting though, is that the person who was really up front in making the announcement in the press release was the city manager, Yan Huang. And I thought to myself, okay, I understand logically this is right because he's the chief executive officer for the city. All the departments, including the police department, they report to the city manager. They do not report to the mayor. They do not report to city councilors, right? But it's always been kind of a best practice in city manager forms of government where the city manager doesn't kind of get ahead of the political people. In other words, you don't put yourself up on display. You try and defer to the mayor and have the mayor make the public statements and whatever, even if you are the person in charge. So, when I saw that, I thought to myself, oh, there's probably a city councilor or two is getting all resentful because the manager was up there sort of, taking the spotlight. Which, and again, I think best not to do that really for human reasons, really, more than anything. Anyway, there was then a city council order that followed after the fact, basically saying it should be the city policy that we should not allow these federal agencies to be using city property for these sorts of purposes, whatever. But anyway, just so sort of as a standard thing, it's like probably let the mayor make the announcement. At least the mayor is one of the elected officials, and the manager just does the takes care of the detail work. So anyway, small matter to be sure. I do expect that there will be some proposals coming down very soon to do further amendments to the so-called Welcoming City Ordinance or Sanctuary City Ordinance, and I just be I would urge our elected officials to be a little careful not to be putting a kick me sign on the backs of everybody in Cambridge to sort of do something that's so confrontational that they actually invite the very thing that you do not want to see happening here in any big way. So ask yourself first, is the current phrasing of the Welcoming City Ordinance really so inadequate as to deal with the current situation that it needs amendment? Would amendment actually become a news item that causes more trouble than it solves any problems? So now that may sound like a kind of a defeatist attitude, but it is, I think, a practical consideration that people should consider. Right, is just a few other things, and this is primarily at the most recent city council meeting, which was actually February 9th. And this week, of course, it was President's Day holiday, and next week, which I think is what the 23rd, it's a roundtable meeting with the school committee. Kind of curious where that's all heading now that half the school committee are all essentially representatives of the teachers union, which is very weird to me. But anyway, so we won't actually have another city council meeting until early March. So, but there have been a couple of city council committee meetings. I went to one on the finance committee just about the operating budget, where the people from the finance department are making it pretty clear, that where money isn't growing on trees, the trends that we saw developing over the past year or more is continuing. Commercial valuations are lagging, which means that there's a very, very real chance that there'll be a shift of the tax burden onto the residential portion. And because they pay so, the ratios are such that if you start to shift it a little bit, it's a very pronounced effect, a very noticeable, like $1,000 increases in your tax bills and more. So, anyway, it's an interesting thing. We'll see where this all heads. Another thing that was at the council meeting, there was a report back from the relatively new community safety department, sort of basically laying out what we do and what we've been doing and whatever. But, whether it's said explicitly or not, there is still this awkward question, which comes down to this, that even though the people who work with community safety department, all very nice people, I've met many of them. The question is, was this created purely as political accommodation because of some of the, remember the whole wave of defund the police, which didn't literally mean defund the police. It meant divert money from police department toward non-uniformed stuff, right? But it's not so clear to me. There are a few things obviously you can kind of offload into another department or even into an existing department of the city, I suppose. But it's still this still it's still a little unclear to me. And I read through the whole thing. Like, what is the function of the community safety department? If it's sort of aftercare for people who have been victims of this, that, or the other thing, as opposed to actually intervening in 911 calls, and then, God bless the people with the dispatch who have to make a distinction between whether you have to send uniformed cops, ununiformed personnel, or a mix. That's a lot to ask of a person working at a dispatch to do, to make those decisions, like, in the moment, it's tough. Another item that's potentially significant, but I don't really know what to make of it, is there the city manager is wanting now to reorganize city departments to put all of the housing related services under a single department, presumably headed by Chris Cotter, right? Yeah, I mean, we are kind of an unusual city in that, we have public housing agencies, we have nonprofits who are partnering with the city, like Justice Start and Homeowners Rehab to sort of develop affordable housing opportunities around the city. We have inclusionary zoning, I think where the intake goes through the housing, it was the housing division of the community development department, but now that's been spun off as its own department. But apparently, this is even further reorganization. But under the new charter, the manager can't just do it. They have to get has to go to a hearing, and then the city council has to say, "Okay, sounds good," or "not so good," right? So I think that matter was either put on the table or something of that sort. So we'll have to see where that goes. I think Councillor Simmons had some real questions about what this really would translate into down the road, and I don't really know. I mean, I sometimes worry that even though they don't say it explicitly, is that there is a kind of an ethos within the kind of the Chris Cotter world that ultimately all housing should be decommodified and public ownership of housing should be more the rule than the exception. Now, maybe I'm jumping the gun in making that conclusion, but I often get that impression that that's really what they want. And that's where I really strongly differ with them. I still fundamentally believe that most housing, most residential property should be not publicly owned. It should be privately owned. It is a personal investment, not so much to make a fortune, but to just, to secure your financial stability into the future. So I would love to see even more home ownership. Even some of the publicly assisted things, I would love to see even more actually home ownership opportunities happening. But there's a lot of politic around the city now where they want to be promoting even more versions of public ownership. Like, social housing is the newest buzz phrase. And I'm still of the belief, and I can't even, it is not a science, but in my opinion, 15% is approximately where the percentage of the public ownership of combination of public housing, call it social housing, inclusionary units, whatever, really should be more in the 15 or so percent range. More than that becomes very economically sustainable. These are not properties that are essentially taxpayers anymore. So then what you're doing then, especially in a period when you're putting a lot of the burden, you're moving some of the burden from commercial into residential. You don't want to be reducing the number of residential properties that are actually taxed fully by replacing them with l almost untaxed, subsidized housing, which is le deed restricted, and hence they pay very, very little in real estate taxes. So I just think the sweet spot is probably 15 or so percent, and that's it, really. But if we end up with a unelected people within a housing department basically inflicting their own personal philosophy about, socialism, let's say it like it is, right? Then that's a kind of a runaway train, and I have some questions about where that would be heading. Now, another thing that was proposed at the and it's been proposed before, but it was proposed at the most recent council meetings was a proposal to increase the fee for the residential permit parking, which is currently $35. I think I remember when it was like $4, right? But it's like $35, and they want to just jack it in one shot up to 75. And then, and it was interesting to listen to the political rhetoric about it because they say, well, yeah, I mean, some of the councillors were openly saying, well, this is a people who are parking on the street, they're using a public access, a public asset for their storage. By the way, these are like words, watchwords. If somebody uses the word storage for parking, you know where their politics is. Most regular people could just call it parking, but they want to somehow distance themselves from that. So they call it storage, like the city is giving you this, like as if they're giving you something for nothing. And by the way, they're not giving you something for nothing. Yes. So, oh, yeah, by the way, they also want to take away the elderly exemption. So I get the elderly exemption now because I'm an old fart, right? But they want to take that away, and they want to jack it up from 35 to 75. Now I'm lucky in that my car, which is it's no longer my 40 some odd year old VW bus, it's a 2014 Honda Civic. But even that might be considered a 12-year-old vehicle. So, sorry folks, I already pay excise tax. I got my bill here today. So for me, it's cheap, $47.48. I got to fork over in addition to, well, if they want to take away the elderly exemption, I would have to then give them 35 or $75. But if you got a newer car, you're paying the city $47.48. You're writing a much larger check. So this notion that somehow people who own automobiles aren't paying anything for the privilege of storing their vehicle on the city streets, that's just nonsense. We're paying, and people pay gas tax, they do all of these things, So anyway, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. But unlike the old days when if somebody even proposed increasing the fee just a little bit, it might be faced with an 8-to-1 vote against it. I think this one went through 9-0, because they're making the argument that the $35 fee doesn't even pay for the program itself. It was interesting that Gary Mello spoke during public comment and said, "Well, one way to do that is just to eliminate the requirement entirely. Just get rid of the fee all around and say if you're just a resident, you just say I'm a resident here, and then you can park. Just totally minimize, if not eradicate all of the processing costs, and then people wouldn't even have to wait in line to pay for their resident parking permit. People, you would just have a little code, and somebody would come by with a little scanner, go, yep, you're okay, you're okay, you're okay. Just be part of your registration sticker, So, anyway, I don't know. I don't know really where it's going, but it seems like we have a currently body of city councilors who are very warm to the idea of coming up with new revenue any way they can right now. And by the way, there are certain programs like the Rise Up Cambridge program, which there was a report about the effectiveness of giving $500 per month free to people. Yeah, sure. Give me $500. Sure, I'll do something good with it. I'll be a happier person if you give me 500 extra bucks a month. But the fact is, all of this stuff really adds up, and we are in a period of time right now where you just can't arbitrarily jack up. I think there was a proposal to can we expand the universal pre-K program to more and more families? I go, well, maybe that's great. Wouldn't that be nice? But it's one of the big budget busters, is the when we went into this business of doing universal pre-K, that does not come for free, anyway, so we'll see how the year plays out with the budget hearings this year, see whether city councilors can actually train themselves to be a little bit more restrained in terms of their asks. But again, I think that kind of remains to be seen. And hey, maybe the world will change, and the diminution of commercial values will change, but I don't think that's going to happen, at least for another couple of years, really, to see that really change. But anyway, such is life. So I think I'm pretty much oh yeah, one other thing, relatively small matter, I guess, for most people, but I always pay attention, is that the city council does hire city manager, deputy city manager, sort of, city auditor, and city clerk, and they are in the process. They did appoint a committee of city councilors and others to be a screening committee to find who's going to become the quote permanent city clerk. Though I think Paula Crane's doing a great job as the interim or acting city clerk. So anyway, so that's in the works. City councilors did release their official statement of their values and priorities, which are about as sort of white bread as it comes. They kind of grandiose saying kind of nothing. And just to kind of wrap it up, there was, I think, at the January 26 meeting, they're once again pushing forward this notion about a home rule petition to allow for a real estate transfer fee. And I said, well, maybe that's a good idea, maybe it isn't. But it's amazing to me how nobody talks about the fact that there's already a fee for every real estate transaction at the state level. And there's a lot of other things, including the Affordable Care Act, that says when you sell something, you got to cough up money too. So how much do you really want to grab whenever anything changes hands? I don't know. I don't know. And I guess the last thing I'll say just quickly here is it was a proposal to enhance the security at Cambridge City Hall. And I have very mixed feelings about that because I want it to feel open. I don't want to have to go through metal detectors, but I'm absolutely sympathetic to some of the concerns of the people who work at City Hall, who also have a need and a wish to feel secure. There are some good adaptations that have already been made, but we'll see where it goes. It's in the manager's hands now to come back with some recommendations. So, anyway, I could say more, but I think I'm going to just leave it at that and hopefully come back in another couple of weeks here on Cambridge Inside Out.